Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu. Joining me on this week's episode is a former guest making his second appearance, Brad Vermutt. How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm pretty solid, man. Pretty solid. This is the third time we've asked each other because I've had to restart a couple times. My bad.
Still good, though. That's good.
So you might know Brad, or you might know Brad better from his YouTube videos, Too Much Hoops. They come out after every Raptors game. It's a very in-depth breakdown, especially defensively, what the Raptors do. But, you know, nowadays, you know, you're on Twitter a lot, too. So,
yep, trying to get my takes out there.
Yeah. No, it's good, man. You got a very active account. Definitely using your platform, which is really awesome to see. And, yeah, so what we are going to do today is talk some basketball. So the Raptors have 8 games that they're going to play. I guess they're called seeding games. They're no longer called regular season games. So, you know, 8 games that they're going to play ahead of the playoffs. And they have 8 different opponents. And so I thought, you know, it would just be good to go into depth and talk about, you know, how the Raptors match up with each team. Starting with their first opponent, the Los Angeles Lakers. They play them on Saturday, August the 1st. At 8:30, it's going to be on ESPN. It's going to be a primetime game. Raptors only played the Lakers once this year. It was one of their best wins of the season, I would say. I guess I'll start here, though. How much of what the Raptors did in that game way back in, I think, October or early November, you know, translates to what might happen, I guess, a month from now?
It's really tough to say because I think the Raptors were missing some guys in that game as well.
Yeah.
Like I recall, Chris Boucher had that was one of his first big games of the season. And yeah, I'm not 100% sure how much that means anything really at this point. Like it feels so long ago. I'm not putting a ton of stock in like previous regular season matchups from this season because I just think, like, the Lakers are also going to be missing Avery Bradley. I'm not 100% sure if JaVale McGee is going to play. He's one of the people in the league who has asthma, which is an additional risk for catching COVID. I haven't heard anything about him sitting out, but I sort of thought he would potentially be a no-brainer sit out. So see what happens with that. But, yeah, the Lakers, one of the things about the Lakers, well, A, this will be their second game. They play the Clippers a couple days before. So I'm not sure if this will be the Raptors' first real test and the Lakers will already have a tough game under their belt. So they might be a little bit more polished. But the other thing about this game is the Lakers have very little to prove in these 8 games. They are 5.5 games ahead of the Clippers and will have no problem holding on to that lead for the first seed. And home court versus the East is irrelevant. So I'm not sure how hard the Lakers are going to go in these 8 games.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I think that should also be said, you know, for the Raptors as well. They are 3 games up on the Boston Celtics for second in the East. And there's pretty much no chance to catch the Bucks. I think they're 6.5 games up. So that's pretty much impossible. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. You know, like this is... It's a weird way to start just because there is going to be so little to go on, right? You can't even look at how the Raptors match up against the Lakers last year, which they went 2-0, because, again, like that was just a completely different team. Like they traded half the squad for Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
So I think really the only thing I wanted to focus on in this one is, well, 2 things, actually. One, I thought it was really interesting the way the Raptors defended AD and defended LeBron. I think even though, as you mentioned, you know, they were short some guys, they didn't have Serge Ibaka and Kyle Lowry, who I think both of them suffered injuries the previous game against the Pelicans. That was the one that where Siakam had 44. You know, even though the Raptors were shorthanded, I think they will still approach defending AD and LeBron the same way. And I think, you know, what we saw a lot from this game was a lot of hard doubling in the post. Like any time Davis caught the ball in the post, back to the basket, facing the basket, doesn't really matter. A hard automatic double. And what do you think? Do you think the Raptors are going to stay with the strategy? I think it makes a lot of sense just because the Lakers don't have that many great shooters that you're that unwilling to leave and you know, bet against.
Yeah, exactly. That's a big part of it is, you know, you look at their lineup. So they have LeBron and AD on the floor. AD, not too much of a three-point threat. He's okay, though. Mm-hmm. But then Danny Green, obviously a very good shooter. KCP, obviously a very good shooter. But once those guys get off the floor, it's like, okay, we have Dwight. We have Kuzma, who's not really a knockdown guy. Caruso is okay. JaVale, Rondo, they're not really shooting. They did pick up Markieff Morris partway through the season. Mm-hmm. That might give them another option to stretch it out a little bit. With at least some of those guys on, like, that's a perfect candidate to double off of, you know, if Rondo's on the floor or whatever. And I think that's one of the reasons they're going to miss Avery Bradley a little bit in this restart, is just like this is going to mean Caruso and Rondo have to move up in the rotation.
Yeah. And I think specifically, you know, when you go back and revisit this game, oh man, I mean, Avery Bradley was really good. Like, first off, he scored the first 7 points for the Lakers, just opened the game very strong. And he spent the entire game putting a full court press on Fred VanVleet. Now, Fred had a good game despite that. He had some really big shots. It was one of the most eye-opening games from Fred this season that said, you know, he's ready to start and be a lead point guard. But, yeah, Bradley was pretty good. And I think, you know, it's hard for the Lakers to replace what he does.
Yeah, he was having a really nice season for them. And something that he's really good at is getting around screens at mm-hmm. the point of attack. And I think that is really going to hurt them because now I don't know if they're going to have to change their coverage a little bit or what, but that was something he really excelled at, was just getting over screens. And I'm not sure they have somebody else with that ability that he does.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially with that, the intensity of the pressure that he puts on the ball, maybe he's a little bit overrated elsewhere on defense, but I do think that it is pretty useful, especially against teams that have more dominant guards. And I feel like, you know, if the Lakers end up facing, I don't know, like the Grizzlies with Ja Morant, or like if Portland somehow sneaks into that eighth spot and there's Dame to deal with, like, I think Bradley is going to be a miss on that front. But I think that was interesting. And I also think that, like, you know, the way the Raptors attacked, I mean, I guess really the one thing I kind of focused on throughout rewatching some of these games was just like, how did Siakam fare? And, you know, the matchup between Siakam and Davis, one thing I liked about this is that I think Siakam was willing to attack Davis, which is big, because there are some of these games that we'll talk about later on where Siakam sort of backed off and wasn't as assertive as usually would be. But in this one, he did attack Davis. He shot 25 times, but he shot 9 of 25. And I just think physically there wasn't an advantage that Siakam could present against Davis. So if he wasn't hitting his outside shots like he wasn't today or in this game, he's not going to be that effective as a number one guy in this matchup. Yeah.
You need him to be a little bit more of a creator, maybe even for other guys.
Yeah.
And also probably having, being able to put Lowry in charge of a pick and roll that involves Davis might be helpful as well. Just mm-hmm. get him thinking a little bit more and see if you can try to outsmart him a little.
Yeah. And so that matchup is tough, but luckily I think the good thing with the Lakers is that they have this really weirdly flawed team. Like, obviously they're a really good team, but they're really flawed in the sense that, like, if they want to put their 3-point shooters out there, if they want to put some of their more offensively minded players out there, then their defense takes a hit. Now, obviously you still have LeBron and AD, so you're going to have a really good backbone for your defense. But in this game, Siakam, anytime he got switched on to Kuzma, anytime he got switched on to McGee, even Bradley, any of the Lakers guards, Siakam was going to work.
Yeah, he coached Kuzma a couple times.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there is still ways to attack the Lakers and score on them, even though they're really good defense. I think Siakam, especially if they can create a mismatch, they could do some real damage.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and then the rest of it is just, I think the Raptors' bench is kind of better than their bench.
Yeah, it's like the Lakers, there are a couple teams like this where they can put, like, a really good 5-person lineup on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then once they have to get out of that, you start to see some weaknesses crop up there. I feel like that way about a lot of teams is it's either that or they have a lot of talented guys, but they're not all necessarily two-way players and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
where it's like they have depth, but they can't really put out like an elite five-person squad. I think the Lakers are the former, where they can put out that elite five-person squad, but then it starts to fall apart pretty quickly. One of the interesting things about the Lakers is like they can put out a lineup of LeBron, AD, Danny Green, KCP, and like Dwight Howard mm-hmm. or Markieff Morris. And that's just a monster lineup. But because LeBron is so good with the ball in his hands, he can kind of play point guard. And I like the size of that lineup. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. And the size could be a little bit of an issue. I think for the most part, the Raptors have done a pretty good job defensively, even though they've been undersized in the backcourt with Kyle and Fred. They've really haven't given up that much defensively. But yeah, offensively, I mean, it is, I don't know, man. It is just a bit of a struggle sometimes when you watch some of these games and these guys are so small.
Yeah,
it is a bit of an uphill battle. I think ultimately, though, like, you know, if I mean, obviously containing LeBron is a big if, but you know, the Raptors, they did a lot of zoning, which I think, again, like the zones, the hard doubles and the posts and stuff like that, all that really just speaks to is just that the Lakers will end up putting guys who aren't great shooters out there, and you can pack the floor a little bit. Now, of course, you know, LeBron going hard in November doesn't exist basically, and
yeah,
you know, it might be different in this scenario, but I still feel pretty confident. I think the Raptors actually hold up pretty decently against the Lakers.
Yeah, and there might be a little bit of a natural letdown for the Lakers too, you know, gearing up for that first big game against the Clippers, and then it's just playing you know, the second game after that, you might just relax a little bit. So hopefully the Raptors can snatch that one. I'd like to get a couple early wins to just kind of take the pressure off, but I'm not 100% sure that's in the cards. Because I also heard Nurse on, I think it was on the Hoops Adjacent podcast, maybe. Sorry to plug another podcast.
No, that was great. That was a great episode.
Yeah, he was talking about how they'll probably use the first few games to kind of ramp into it, play hard for a couple of games, and then chill. So yeah, I'm not sure how hard they'll come out in these first couple games.
Yeah, that's completely fair. And Nurse has talked about maybe extending his rotation a little bit too, which I think just makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Some of the tougher games are more in the middle, like the Celtics game is tough. The Bucks game is really tough, and those are in the middle of the schedule. The next opponent the Raptors play, Monday, August the 3rd, so that's 2 days in between, or 1 day in between. You know, it's at 1:30, NBA TV. Fantastic. I love seeing the Raptors in the afternoon. so the Raptors play the Miami Heat. And so the Raptors are 0-2 against the Heat this year, but it's very hard to draw solid conclusions based on those two games because the Raptors were hilariously bad from three. They shot 25% against the Heat in those two games, including the franchise worst, 6 of 42 in game two.
Okay, I was going to ask if that was that game. Yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah, it was painful. I think that maybe their only game in the 70s this year in terms of scoring. It was ugly.
And that was just like, I don't even think they got like the worst shots ever. They just sucked.
For that game, the Raptors, I'm pretty sure from the right wing three-pointers, I was looking at their heat map for this game, and they were 1 for 24.
Oh man.
it's unbelievable. And this
cool
game,
like 6%.
Yeah, no, it was really tough. And when you watch back on the film, I mean, like, yeah, some of them were contested, but some of them were just wide open shots for guys like Fred, who if he gets a decent look, he's pretty automatic when he shoots. Kyle can be streaky, and I think, you know, when he first came back from injury, that was the Heat game, the first one, and he shot over 11 from that one. But that's understandable in a way because A, Kyle's a little streaky, and B, you know, he's coming back from injury, you know, he wasn't fully himself. But yeah, it's just tough. I think defensively, this is where maybe we can draw more tangible takeaways from this one. I think it was interesting because they tried two completely different approaches on Jimmy Butler. One was they sent hard double teams at him, and he had 12 assists in that game. And then another time, they sort of covered him in single coverage and sort of more of a conservative kind of pick and roll coverage. And he scored more, but his assists were down more. I mean, between the two of those coverages, what do you think is the best one to guard Butler?
I think probably, I don't know, I'm not super worried about him, like, dominating the game. You know what I mean? Like, I'm loath to start throwing double teams at him, especially when he's on the court with, like, Duncan Robinson, Tyler Hero. Like, guys can really shoot the three. I think it might just weaken the defense a little bit. I'm inclined to play him a little bit more conservative. And if he starts, you know, destroying the Raptors, you know, maybe mix up the coverage, throw a few different looks at him. But yeah, like with his lack of 3-point shooting this season, I think he's shooting like 24% or something wild.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels like you should be able to contain that type of a player. If he doesn't have that long distance threat, like you should be able to sag off him a little bit and contain him a little bit more. And I also, this isn't necessarily relevant to the 8-game seeding games or whatever, but in the playoffs, I'm a bit curious if he is going to go down the DeMar DeRozan path, where a lot of your efficiency is coming from free throws, and the other team can game plan for you and avoid, you know, biting on your fakes and stuff, and your efficiency just kind of drops off and it hurts the team a little bit.
Yeah, no, it's a great comparison. Like I told you, someone was averaging 20 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, shooting 45% from the field and 25% from three with 9 free throw attempts per game. You tell that's a DeMar DeRozan stat line.
Yeah,
that is. But yeah, Jimmy Butler, obviously, you know, it's weird because he does have some advantages, obviously, defensively. You know, and yeah, I think his playmaking is a little bit better than DeMar's, although DeMar's really taken a step up there. But yeah, I mean, it is interesting because I agree with you. I think playing him more straight up makes a lot more sense. I think, A, you put a bigger, maybe bigger is different, but okay, you put a like-sized defender in OG against Jimmy. I think he should be able to do okay. Like, when I watched the film, OG was surprisingly bad on Butler. You know, I think Butler was able to sort of out-muscle, and then he's really good at, like, shifting and spinning and changing directions, and OG's not as good at that as compared to Butler.
Okay.
But I think on the whole, like, you know, I'm fairly confident in that matchup. And of course, if you need help, you can bring Serge over, you can bring Mark over. You can kind of live with Butler getting to his 30 points because they're probably not going to be that efficient of a 30 points. Whereas, you know, the Heat, where they really make their money is on the 3-point line. I think they finished the season. Well, quote unquote finished the season, but I think they were number one in 3-point percentage.
Oh, for real?
Yeah, like they were really good shooting the three this year, and it was kind of obviously, you know, Duncan Robinson is they're number one in 3-point percentage this year, 38.3% for a team, which is kind of wild. And really, they're able to put lots of shooters on the floor. You know, obviously Bam is not a 3-point shooter, and Butler is not a 3-point shooter, but the guys around them. You know, Duncan Robinson shooting 45%, Kendrick Nunn at 36%, which is decent when he's shooting 6 a game.
Yeah.
Jay Crowder, you know, he only played 1 game for them this year, but he's on 39% for the season.
I think Heat fans are in for a bit of a surprise with that one, because I think he on total on the season, I think he's 32%, but I think he had 39% for the Heat over the course of like 6 or 8 games or something. And I think he's had like maybe 1 or 2 seasons where he shot over 33% or something. So I'm not super worried about his shooting in particular. But yeah, that trio of Robinson, Nunn, and Tyler Hero, they can drop some bombs. And then they missed Goran Dragic for a lot of the season, and then he came back, and I think he was coming off the bench towards the end. You know, he's an interesting piece as well.
Yeah, he's been kind of like their sixth man. And he's been decent in that role. Like, when I watch it, you know, obviously when they turn it to the bench, it reminds me of, like, Phoenix Suns scoring Dragic back when he was backing up Steve Nash, where he would just come in and just bomb threes.
And he plays a pretty hard-nosed style, too. I think it fits well with their ethos.
Mm. Hard-nosed, but also some egregious flops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
same with – he's a little Lowry-esque.
Yeah. I don't know what they taught them in Houston. But, yeah.
Another guy I like for them, too, is defensively, especially, is Derek Jones Jr.
Okay.
I think he does a lot of great stuff when they go to their zone. The Heat are somebody trying to cover for guys like Duncan Robinson, who aren't necessarily the best defenders. I think they rely on some zone coverage. And Derek Jones Jr., I think he's the one who was guarding Siakam when he, like, got bottled up on an end-of-game scoring attempt. Yeah. Yeah. And he's pretty nice defensively. I like him. Not the best shooter, but the Heat have some interesting lineups, I guess.
Yeah, for sure, because they do have like just a lot of wings and a lot of wings that have a little bit of a different special skill set. To your point about the zones, I mean, man, you know, the Raptors were just trash at shooting threes. So this was one of the most. It was like a college game, that game too, because the Heat stayed in a 2-3 zone for the second, third, and fourth quarters, like maybe one or two possessions in between there, they played it straight up.
But yeah, they basically said, well, we're going to play it until you start hitting threes, and the Raptors went 6 for 42. So
it was disgusting. It looked like watching Syracuse basketball. Like
it was tough.
Yeah, and again, I guess the big thing I wanted to focus on was really just Siakam versus Bam. Again, it's sort of similar to that Anthony Davis thing, where it's, if Siakam doesn't have a physical advantage against Bam, he's going to have to shoot a lot of threes, or he's going to have to play make. And those are, you know, he just didn't shoot a lot of threes. He didn't shoot the three that well in the first game against Miami. And it's just, I don't know, man. I guess one thing that bothers me with Siakam is sometimes that, like, okay, if the physical advantage isn't quite there, he might try to disengage from the game a little bit. And, you know, maybe if he's not having a good night, or maybe it's not a good matchup, it's not wise to force it. But you don't want to see a drop off in intensity, though, necessarily. And you still want to see Siakam heavily involved. And that's where I think, I mean, how would Siakam score against Bam? Or is it more of a just the Raptors got to get him a screen and try to attack a mismatch?
It's tough to score against Bam. Like, he's one of the best defenders in the league, and he is so big, and not just like tall and long, but he's really strong too. Mm-hmm. And then he also has incredible foot speed. So it's just like he's one of the toughest guys for a guy like Giannis or Siakam to match up against.
Yeah.
Because it's just like he neutralizes a lot of the advantages that those guys have. So I think trying to, you know, work it around a little bit and maybe entice some switches with like a 4-5 screen, trying to get Bam switched onto Gasol and get him out of help position a little bit. Mm. But again, if the Raptors aren't going to hit threes, then the Heat can just go to their zone and not worry about that screening action at the top too much. So I think it will come down to like the team's offense needs to be good, so that Bam Adebayo can't just like zone in on Siakam and sort of forget about the rest of everybody else. Because I think that is a tough matchup for Siakam.
Yeah, and there's no shame in that, man. There's no shame in that. Like,
I mean, he's borderline. He's a defensive player of the year candidate. So
yeah, I mean that game. I think after the All-Star break, where Miami played host to Milwaukee, that game was, man, that was eye-opening with the way Bam was able to guard Giannis and just completely bottle him up.
He was awesome in that game.
Yeah. Anyway, I think the Raptors can defend the Heat generally pretty well. I mean, look, when they send the hard doubles at Butler and trapped him all the time, he had 12 assists, and I think the Heat scored 121 in an overtime win. When they played him more straight up and it was just like a regular kind of defensive scheme, I think the Raptors held him to 86 points. Now, the Raptors, obviously, their offense was ass that game, so somehow they couldn't win despite that. But, I think they could defend the Heat. I mean, it's so much of their scoring is on the perimeter with guys like Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero. And it's not that I'm discounting these guys, but I just wonder that, like, when you can really focus and zone in and try to like scheme away some of these things and really focus on this. And of course the physicality in the playoffs is different. Like to rely on the guys who are rookies in the case of Nunn and Hero. And then also who's basically a rookie in Duncan Robinson. He played a little bit last year, but he's basically a rookie. Like to rely on those three guys to give you like 40 points per game. It's just,
I think they probably like are nice pieces who need to lose for a year or two in the playoffs before they start really, really making big contributions in that.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that is that probably led to them making the decision to get Iguodala to try and shore things up a little bit, around the trade deadline, which will be interesting. Or no, that was a buyout, right?
Iguodala?
Yeah.
No, he came.
Or he was just unsigned, right?
He was with Memphis. He was in that Memphis trade.
Oh, that's right. He wasn't playing in Memphis. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and that's interesting too, as you mentioned, because you know when you bring in guys like Jay Crowder and Andre Iguodala, it does take away from some of the stuff that you can't run the same stuff that you run for, a Duncan Robinson as you would for a guy like Andre Iguodala. Like you can't get him off two screens and then just have him pull like. That's not what Iggy does. That's not what Jay Crowder does. I mean, Jay Crowder chucks a little bit, and sometimes he hits a lot of threes, but, you know.
Yeah, I think it will be good for their defense, probably, like the Heat are one of these teams that have a ton of talent. Like I'm looking at the rotation: Butler, Bam, Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Derek Jones Jr., Jay Crowder, Tyler Hero, Iguodala, Goran Dragic, Myers Leonard, and Kelly Olynyk. Like those guys can all play, but a lot of them are not major sort of two-way threats. Like you put Duncan Robinson on the floor and he gives you a ton of shooting, but now he creates a hole in your defense. Tyler Hero, not an elite defender either. Jay Crowder, very good defender, not a great shooter. Iguodala, I mean, he's been off for a year. I'm not really sure.
I was going to say, who knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's the Heat sort of feel like one of those teams who just have a little bit too much depth of pretty good guys that they need to consolidate at some point in the next couple years.
Yeah. Hopefully they don't. They don't consolidate because you know, Miami is scary as a free agent destination.
Okay,
moving on. So the Raptors then play Orlando. This is August 5th. So again, another day off in between. No national TV for Raptors Magic, which is just kind of merciful, really, because no one wants to watch these games. Raptors
especially if they wind up matching up in the playoffs. We don't need to see an extra game of it.
We might have to see that once again. That's unbelievable. Yeah, so the Raptors are 3-0 against the Magic this year. They played all three of these games super early in the season. For a while, it seemed like the Raptors were playing the Magic every other game at the start of the year. It was a little awkward. So the Magic, and now they're going to be without Jonathan Isaac, who had season-ending surgery. That's unfortunate. And Al Frucamino, I think, is also out. And then I'm going to hit you with two quick fun stats, because I don't think we want to talk that long about Orlando. But Aaron Gordon and Nikola Vucevic, both averaging 4 points per game against the Raptors this year.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, in all fairness, Vucevic got had an ankle injury through the game. But, I mean, he did play, multiple games. And
That's tough.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Is there anything to say about the Magic?
One of the things about them is, heading into this, the Magic have their games against Brooklyn, Sacramento, and Indiana. So this will be the first game against a contending squad. So, you know, maybe they try to go a little extra hard and see, you know, how they match up against an elite team, or maybe, you know, the Raptors shock them and beat the crap out of them. I lean more towards the latter, just cause you know, losing Jonathan Isaac, I think hurts a lot.
Yep.
And they're already a bit of a vulnerable team anyways. So, yeah, I think this is probably the Raptors' third game. And I think this section is where the Raptors will be like, okay, let's get some wins under our belt. You know, make sure we stay in that the two seed if we can. And then take the foot off the gas a little bit later.
Yeah. This is one of those teams where I question, who's guarding Pascal? Because
it looks like Aaron Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not going to work.
Or Terrence Ross?
Oh my, that's definitely not going to work. No, that's going to be some hard double teaming. This is what's going to happen. Raptors going to move the ball. They're going to hit some threes.
Yeah.
You have Mark guarding Vucevic in the post. This is, yeah. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't want to count out the Magic because who knows, DJ Augustine might score 25 points in game one. But, I mean, other than that, I mean, yeah. Let's just move on. So the Raptors play the Celtics.
Yeah, this is the first one that should be a win.
Yeah, definitely. The Raptors play the Celtics Friday, August 7th, so another off day in between. This is at 9 p.m., which is a little strange. I don't know why it has to be at 9 p.m., but okay. Yeah, so this one is the most important game out of the eight. It's by far. I mean, in terms of seeding and things like that, the Raptors have a three-game edge on the Celtics. But the Celtics hold a 2-1 advantage in the season series, and so the Raptors can take this game. And I'd have to check the conference record, but I think the Raptors might be able to secure the tiebreaker. But also, it's just important because it's important to beat the Celtics, man. I mean, it sucks that we've already lost two times to them this season. Yeah. What were some of your takeaways when you're thinking back on the Raptors Celtics matchups this year?
The Celtics are an interesting matchup for the Raptors because I feel like they are a little bit similar. They have good point guard, good wings, pretty decent defensive big. I think one of the problems for the Celtics is they can't quite get their best five guys on the court at the same time. Like, okay. I think their best five guys are Tatum, Brown, Hayward, Walker, and Smart. And that's just too small of a lineup. Like, your biggest guy is probably Tatum. But they need Daniel Tice. And he's been good. Mm-hmm. But I just I love Smart's defense. And he's been shooting fairly well this season on pretty high volume, I think.
Yeah, 42% on 5 3-point attempts per game. That is surprising.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So it's like you want him on the floor, but then it's like, okay, well, we take off like Kemba Walker then, I guess, or Gordon Hayward, or Jaylen Brown. It's a tough decision. I sort of see Boston being in the same tier as Toronto in terms of how they match up specifically. Like, I think it's a great matchup. Like, this is, I really want to see this series. Mm-hmm. Because there's a lot of talent on both sides, really. I think the Raptors probably get them once you start to get into like the seventh and eighth man.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty clear cut favorites, but that top six is pretty nice for the Celtics. They're a real threat.
Yeah, it's a talented team for sure, and really, the offensive firepower they have is kind of difficult. I think, you know, not to reduce everything to who guards Siakam, but I do have some questions as to how they guard Siakam. Because Siakam only played one game against him this year. And in that game, I think he had 33, he had 5 3-pointers in that game. The one thing I noticed with Siakam is just, I think he's a little bit too big for Tatum or Brown to guard. And then, you know, they don't really have like a natural kind of power forward. Like, it's not like a Bam Adebayo on this team. It's not like an Anthony Davis on this team. Tatum or Brown, they're really good wing defenders. They really are. But I think Siakam's just a little bit taller than these guys, and he's a little longer. And that's important, because if Siakam can post you up and get the hook shot over you, or get the spin over you, or just shoot over the top of you, that's a big issue. And I do wonder if the Celtics can actually adequately guard Siakam with either Tatum or Brown. What do you think about that specific matchup defensively?
Tatum has been pretty great defensively this season, but a lot of what he does really well is out on the perimeter, and he's really good off ball too. Like, that's one of the things that makes him a really good defender. In terms of matching up with Siakam, like, that's a tough matchup for anybody. And I think what the Celtics are going to need to do is have Tice really active on the back line of that defense, and rely on that and hope that Siakam can't pass his way out of it to 3-point shooters. And the Celtics have been, do you know where they rank defensively this season?
I think they're top five. They've been good at just swarming the ball and everything.
They're pretty good. And I think Brad Stevens made some like adjustments to their defensive scheme. Cause I've been watching some of their games this season where it's like, they look like they're running a little bit of the Raptors, sort of zone that they play, forcing shots to the corners and stuff at times. And he is a coach I trust to some degree to maximize what he can get out of his talent.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that I can see going either way. I think in a series, I like the Raptors, just because once you get past the sixth person on the Celtics, now you get into like, okay, Brad Wanamaker, like Enes Kanter.
Mm-hmm.
Grant or Robert Williams.
Semi Ojeleye. I mean, Semi Ojeleye might be their best bet to guard Siakam, actually.
Yeah, that's not, I mean, it's not crazy if he can stay in front of him.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be an interesting one.
Yeah, it is interesting. And I think it's a really cool matchup because there's distinct advantages, I think, both ways. I think one problem that the Celtics present is just they're so big across the wing that you're going to have a mismatch defensively for the Raptors. And you know, the way the Raptors guarded them this season, you know, you can have a guy like Fred guarding Kemba. That makes a lot of sense. And you can have Pascal guarding either Tatum or Brown, probably Brown. You can have OG on Tatum. You can have Gasol on Tice. But that does leave Kyle Lowry guarding a guy like Gordon Hayward. And as much as I love Kyle and his pesky defense, everything like that, you know, he plays above his size. Gordon Hayward's like a legit 6'7".
And like, you know, with move.
Yeah, not like an unskilled 6'7". So
yeah,
that's a bit of an issue. But I also think that the way the Raptors can They have also have some offensive advantages. I think, you know, obviously, I think Siakam is going to do pretty well in this matchup. I think Kyle has always done really well against the Celtics, even though the Celtics, I do think that, you know, they could put Smart on him. You know, Kemba competes defensively. He's not terrible, but he's just small. But, yeah, I mean, I think one thing the Raptors can do is just they have a scoring advantage at the center spot. I think Serge can really do some damage. Tice is not a guy who's going to be a vertical defender, maybe at the rim, but, like, he's not that tall. So if you post him up where you get Serge a paint touch deeper in the lane, he can shoot over the top with a hook shot.
And if you can lure him out to the three-point line, you know, if Gasol hits a couple threes or whatever.
Yeah.
Then I mean, it's like Tatum on the back line of the defense, which is okay, but it's not like having OG back there or something with a bit more size.
Yeah, and that's one thing is I want to know how Gasol does against the Celtics, because he did play the first game the Raptors played against the Celtics. That was the second game of the season, and Mark was just terrible in that one, man. I think he maybe went 0-for. I definitely remember down the stretch in the fourth quarter. He missed like two very easy short roll shots. He got blocked by Jaylen Brown at the rim, leading to a turnover and a fast break. And then he, you know, Grant Williams took a charge on Mark. Mark, when does Mark barrel over people? You know what I mean? So I don't know, man. Mark was terrible in that one. But I think Serge, you know, Serge works really well in this matchup. And I feel like, you know, we're only talking about this specific game, but if the Raptors were to play the Celtics in a playoff series, I could see Serge starting over Mark. As like a mid-series adjustment, just because I think Serge has a lot of advantages in terms of the way he can score against the Celtics. They're just not that good at guarding bigger guys who can, you know, shoot the mid-range shot and also finish reliably inside.
Yeah, it's a difficult skill set to match up against. And another adjustment that I think the Raptors have up their sleeve that will be used in the playoffs, either against Boston or Milwaukee, whenever it becomes necessary, is starting Norm over Fred. Because that will just neutralize a little bit of that size disadvantage. And he still does a lot of the same things that Fred does, just with, you know, higher release, and a little bit better attacking the rim as well.
Yeah. The one issue there is I think you do put, if you put Norm into the starting lineup for Fred in a Celtics matchup, you're probably going to have to go with Kyle guarding Kemba. And I just feel like Kyle's on-ball defense is just not as good as Fred's is. Like, Fred is just really good at it, right? So,
oh, he's a monster.
And I mean, you could put Norm on it, but then you're still having the size mismatch with Kyle guarding with Hayward. So, this, I mean, it's an interesting matchup for sure, and I'd love to see it. I think, you know, just from a basketball perspective, it'd be great.
And I wonder if they'll put Lowry on Jaylen Brown at all.
That's interesting.
Just maybe doesn't have quite as much of a bag of tricks.
Yeah, that's
as
true.
Hayward. Similar size.
Yeah, that's true. But, the handle's not as strong, and the offensive game is just not as polished, but yeah, that's interesting. The Raptors play the Memphis Grizzlies after that. Saturday, August 9th, another off day in between, 2 p.m., not on national TV, okay. So the Raptors have not played the Grizzlies this year. JV was supposed to come back in late March to get his ovation, I guess. No ring, unfortunately, but Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to envision how the Raptors match up with the Grizzlies because, again, it's a completely different team. The Raptors never played this version of the Grizzlies before. The way I'm looking at it is, you know, they have a lot of pick-and-roll threats. You know, Ja Morant, obviously, handling the pick-and-roll is tricky. And, of course, they have, pretty decent guys who can finish. Like, Jaren Jackson is shooting the three really well, but he can also finish inside. JV, we know what he can do in the pick-and-roll. And then Brandon Clark. Rookie, but he's averaging 12 points per game this year, shooting like 60%.
Yeah, he's been nice. A lot of big time lob threat, putback dunks, that kind of thing. And then I even like you know, Kyle Anderson is a quality player.
Yeah,
Canadian kid, Dylan Brooks.
Yeah. Dylan Brooks averaging like almost 16 this year.
Yeah, he's been nice. I picked him up on the wire in fantasy before my beautiful fantasy season got torched.
Wow.
And they have Justice Winslow as well, too, right?
That's right,
Is he going to be playing?
I guess so. I mean, I think he was making some statements, but I think ultimately the Grizzlies are really motivated to go back to the playoffs. And
They're in terms of where they're sitting, they have, I think they're 3.5 games up on the 9 seed. But there are 3 teams who are 3.5 games behind them. So I think they're probably going to have to do a play-in game no matter what. I think you have to be within four games to get the play-in game.
Oh, the league fucked them, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, by the time they're at their sixth game, they might have a they have no chance of catching Dallas, who's like seven games ahead of them. Mm-hmm. So they might just be in a comfortable spot where they're not too desperate for a win.
Right.
Because nobody can catch them for eighth, and nobody really can they can't leapfrog over anybody to get higher up. So I think like those sorts of dynamics are going to come into these seeding games a lot, especially with home court advantage not mattering anymore. Mm-hmm. Like if you're the two seed versus the three seed, there's no advantage except for matchup. Mm-hmm. And if you're in the 4 or 5 seed, there's not even that. It's just like what side of the bracket you want to be on. So there's no incentive to try to jump from fifth to fourth or that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think those are going to be important things to keep an eye on.
Yeah, for sure.
And I love the Grizzlies too. I just want to throw that out there. Oh, they're a very exciting young team. And if you haven't been watching them, you should. They're like the Hawks, but more fun and good.
And they actually win.
Yeah.
Their point guard plays a style that actually leads to wins. It's pretty important. Although I do have Trey on my fantasy team, so I don't mind. It's great getting 30 points and 12 assists.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Raptors actually match up. I mean, I don't know, man. They're just a better team. So, I mean, I think you obviously need pretty solid interior defenders against some other guys. And, you know, it'd be interesting to see JV versus Marc Gasol. Obviously, that's been not really a debate anymore because the Raptors won the championship. But it comes up surprisingly often for something. Like, no one ever debates, like, DeMar versus Kawhi. I guess that one is so much... there's such a big difference there that, like, no one's really going to make that argument. But,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It'd be interesting. And, of course, it would just be fun to see Ja, but I think Raptors won this one. It's not too much to look into.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And especially, like, this will be sort of... the next game that we're going to talk about is the day exactly after this one. So I think the Raptors will probably go hard in this one, try to get the W, and then take their foot off the gas for the next one.
Right. And that the next one, for some reason, there's a back-to-back, as you mentioned. Raptors play Milwaukee, 6:30 p.m. On August 10th. On ESPN. So I don't know, man. The more I look at the Milwaukee matchup, it's just really tough. I don't want to fall into the same trap as I did last year because I think I did predict that the Bucks were better than the Raptors and things like that, and the Bucks are going to win. Whatever. All right, I was totally wrong. But like the Bucks are just a really damn good team, and defensively, they have really hurt the Raptors this year. So they're 2-0 against the Raptors this year. One of them was early in the season. Siakam had early foul trouble. I don't know, man. I was also at a wedding, so I threw that game out the window. but I did watch their most recent matchup. And, of course, that one didn't have Norm. It didn't have Mark. But, man, I don't know. The Bucks defensively were really, really impressive. And this is another matchup where I think, you know, as we saw in the playoffs last year, Siakam struggled against the Bucks last year, man. He only averaged like 14 points per game, shot like 40%. Now, granted, he wasn't hitting any threes at all, which is a bit of an issue, but... you have Giannis guarding him, and then you have Brook Lopez helping at the rim. That's just a lot for Siakam to get through.
Yeah, the games where he struggles, I find he tends to struggle against defenders who are bigger than him. Mm-hmm. And Giannis sort of fits that Bam Adebayo skill set of being big, long, strong, and great foot speed. Mm-hmm. And then you throw Brook Lopez behind that, too, to help block shots at the rim, and that gets a little bit tricky. But I do like that Siakam has expanded his range a lot this season, better off the dribble. And I also think that the Bucks have done a lot of their defensive damage this season with drop defensive coverage. So when somebody tries to screen at the point of attack, Brook Lopez has dropped way down into the paint to sort of protect the rim at all costs, giving up a lot of three-pointers. I think they gave up the most in the league, or close to it. And that can be vulnerable if you can put five guys on the court who can all shoot the three. Mm-hmm. And the Raptors are one of the teams that has the ability to do that with no defensive drop off. I think Gasol and Serge are both shooting close to 40% this season. Mm-hmm. And then you have, you know, Siakam, OG, Lowry, Fred VanVleet, Norm, like they're all shooting at least respectable percentages. Like I think over 35% and a lot of them close to 40. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some vulnerability there for the Bucks. But one of the things I did like that they did this season was bringing in Marvin Williams, at the trade deadline.
Yeah.
Because I think that gives him a bit more versatility defensively. He just has such better mobility than Brook Lopez does. Mm-hmm. So that might allow them to switch a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But my question to that is whether or not Mike Budenholzer will go to it.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% trusting his ability to make the correct decisions. But in terms of like what's changed from last season to this season, there are some big things. I think Wes Matthews wasn't playing in the playoffs last year, was he, for them?
No, they picked him up.
No, he wasn't. Dante DiVincenzo didn't really get a lot of run with them.
Yeah.
I think this is his second season, but he's looked nice this season. Like he would be a nice replacement for Bledsoe if he's scared to shoot or unable to score.
Yeah.
And then Marvin Williams and Pat Connaughton's even looked pretty nice this season too. So they just have a lot of weapons, and this is one of the teams that can put a lot of two-way players on the floor at the same time.
Yeah.
Even if one of their ways is a little bit limited.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they have such a good fastball. Like, it's just so hard to get them to adjust to anything. And I mean, you know, to Bud's credit, I mean, as much as we like to poke fun at, you know, his inability to make any adjustments, he is a pretty good A strategy. And
yeah, he might not need to.
That's exactly the thing, right? So, and I think even getting a guy like Robin Lopez just helps him in the sense because now they have, you know, if in the case of Brook Lopez getting into foul trouble, they still can maintain the amount of rim protection necessary for the Bucks to succeed. Like that's basically the Bucks' strategy: is you cannot score the rim. Period. You can hit some threes above the break. You know, if you hit enough of them, we're gonna win. And Bud's not gonna make any adjustments. That's kind of the whole story with them.
Yeah.
And they're really really good at some of the stuff. I mean to the point like Siakam in that game in the game after the All-Star break, he hit 5 threes in that game, and the Raptors' offense still as a whole just couldn't really get it done.
They muck it up a lot.
They're just really good at that. And you know, you look at the center matchup. I really do think that this is where Sir or Mark losing all this weight really helps, because I think if he has lighter legs, he can get more lift into a shot. I want Mark to shoot like 8 threes a game against the Bucks.
When he came back, I think it was maybe after February. Like it was pretty close to the shutdown. But he had been out for a while, and I remember him saying that he was watching the team play mm-hmm. and seeing spots where he should be shooting more than he was.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping that he follows through on that. Mm-hmm. He did a little bit when he came back. He shot slightly more threes, mm-hmm. But I'm hoping he really lets them fly, especially in this matchup.
Yeah,
and this matchup is also one that I'm curious of if the Raptors will run out. They might not do it in the eight seeding games, but if they match up in the playoffs, I want to see the lineup of Gasol, Serge, Siakam, OG, and Lowry.
Yeah.
And just see if you can meet side with size and just like brutalize them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that is interesting because I think actually the Raptors defensively can hold up reasonably well. Like Giannis. Okay. So you're never going to say Giannis got shut down because that's just not true. But, you know, like, the Raptors held Giannis in check reasonably. Like, him shooting 5 of 14 for 19 points is fine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's what your goal is, basically.
And that includes jumpers. Like, in that game, I mean, I was actually a little surprised, but Giannis had, like, a turnaround jumper. He had a corner three. We know he's been expanding his skill set and stuff like that, but it's still impressive to see it. But, you know, I think the Raptors have a decent strategy to shut down Giannis. I think they kind of created those Giannis roles last year's playoffs. I think they could still execute them even without Kawhi defensively, because you can have OG and you have Siakam, and you even have a guy like Rondé who did a pretty decent job guarding Giannis. And of course, you have so much rim protection around them. But
yeah, I think actually interesting getting the, you know, replacing Kawhi with OG. I think that is quite good. I think defensively, one of the things that could potentially hurt the Raptors a little bit more is missing Danny Green's length as the two guard.
Okay.
Just because I was watching, I was breaking down the conference final series from last year, and there were a lot of instances where Danny Green gets switched onto Chris Middleton and is just a more bothersome player than Fred VanVleet is for somebody that size.
That's true.
So I think that could be a factor as well, potentially. But yep. As you say, the Raptors – you know, the offense is the big question in this matchup. I think they'll be okay on defense.
Yeah, Middleton's been decent in this. Again, I would love to make fun of Chris Middleton, but he's had a really good year. You know, honestly, borderline All-NBA, 50, 40, 90, something like that. He's just really good at shooting over the top.
Yeah, he's got a nice release.
Yeah, because he doesn't really jump that much, and he's got great length as well. So he doesn't really need a lot to get a shot up. But, I mean, at the same time, anytime Chris Middleton dribbles, it's a turnover.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Especially when he tries to put it behind his back while the Bucks are already bleeding a 24-3 run. That's it's a great time for Chris Middleton to put it behind his back.
Gotta get a little fancy with it.
Oh, man, that's the time you gotta put out that behind-the-back package, you know?
Yeah.
Especially when you're not really a dribbler. Yeah, this is just tough. I think really, you know, you're just going to need Mark to shoot a lot of threes. I think Serge really came out in that game after the All-Star break. Serge came out, shot a bunch of threes. I think he shot like 11, but he only made like two. It's just, you know, you're just going to have to shoot a lot and make a lot of above-the-break threes. That's kind of a common theme sort of throughout some of these tougher matchups, is that the Raptors really do need to just get wet. But at the same time, you know, they have some pretty good shootings. I mean,
yeah, they don't have to play really. I'm sure they will play Patrick McCaw, but they don't really have to play a non-shooter if they don't want to.
Yeah.
Which is a nice luxury.
Yeah. And also, one thing you pointed out is that even if you do play a non-shooter like Rondé, I was watching back one of the videos, that's one way you can actually attack the drop scheme, is that, you know, you could make a guy like Rondé, who's getting guarded by Brook Lopez, you can give him the ball and have him drive, and he's basically got like a runway of, I don't know, if you set a good screen, like 12 feet.
Yeah. Yeah. And Lopez will keep backing up closer and closer to the rim. Like he basically is going to back up all the way to the charge circle and then just put his hands up.
Yeah.
Which is very valuable. He's good at it.
It's unbelievable. He's really been one of the best defenders in the NBA just doing that. So that's the Bucks series, or the Bucks game. The Sixers after that, the Raptors play the Sixers. Day off in between. This is 6:30 p.m. ESPN game again. Raptors 2-1 against the Sixers this year. I'm just going to hit you with a fun stat off the top. Joel Embiid in this series, he's played two games against the Raptors, averaging 5 points per game on 16% shooting.
Woo, that's tough. That's that includes the Ofer, I believe, in the first game against the Raptors, which was beautiful.
I love that's still the pin video on your YouTube page. It's just,
I mean, it's hard to beat.
my favorite part, actually, I just rewatched it before this interview. My favorite part was in the fourth quarter, there was a foul against the Raptors before the ball was inbounded. So there was a free throw shot, and they gave Joel Embiid the ball just to shoot, just so he could get off zero. And he even missed that.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Sixers have a pretty soft schedule I'm looking at
here. Yeah.
So they have the Pacers, the Spurs, the Wizards, who will be have nobody, the Magic, Portland, Phoenix, and then the Raptors are the first contender that they play.
That's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah. So they, like, I feel like at that point, I think there's no way that Indiana holds on to the five spot without Victor Oladipo. And with the Sixers having this strong of a, or this soft of a schedule, I think it'll be probably no problem for them to secure that five spot. So they might be locked into that matchup and not really caring by the time they get to the seventh seeding game. That's a possibility as well.
Yeah.
It's hard to gauge with these things, but that the Sixers, I really want them to get into that five spot, because I'm excited about a potential match up with the Heat in the first round.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
They do match up well, and plus the storylines would be great with Jimmy Butler playing against the Sixers.
I also love that one of those fan bases with like high expectations has to see their team go home in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, it was
that'll be great.
It was even fun when they played each other a couple years ago. I think maybe 2018. That was a pretty fun series. I think Dwayne Wade had a really big game one time, but obviously a very different team now.
Yeah.
So with the Sixers, what were you gonna say?
Oh, I was gonna say one of the things about the Sixers and their sort of early season struggles, or whole season struggles, depending on how you look at it.
Yeah.
Is Al Horford just has not really seemed good, but in a way where like I feel like he is a better player than what he has been. And I wonder, I heard him a quote that made me think, oh, maybe he was playing through an injury or something. And I'm wondering if he's going to come back a little more refreshed after this break, a bit like a Marc Gasol situation where he just looks a bit more like his old self. And that could be big for the Sixers if he can sort of give them the defensive push and he can hit threes and stuff like that. That would be huge for them.
Well, look, there was no way this was going to go wrong. Like, it's not like you're going to not give a 34-year-old power forward a max contract so he can play out of position. yeah, I mean, this is... I didn't think anyone would take the most overpaid backup center crown from Timofey Mozgov or Bismack Biyombo or... But yeah, I mean, wow. He's been really bad this year. Just
yeah.
It's unfortunate because we know that Al Horford is not... He's much better than he has been this year. But obviously, I don't think the role for him this year just fit. It didn't really make a lot of sense.
It's a tough fit. And before the break, I think they were mixing him coming off the bench a little bit here and there. But then they had the injury to Simmons.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see what they'll do in terms of starting and finishing, too. Yeah. That's the other thing, because one of the things this is one of those teams where like they can put five good players on the floor, but then if you start swapping out like Korkmaz for Horford or whatever, then it's like, well, Korkmaz isn't really as good of a defender and your size advantage goes way down. Mm-hmm. So it's tough because when you have Embiid and Simmons on the floor, that's already two non-shooters. It's a bit like the Heat and you need to surround them with other shooters. And yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Yeah. So I was looking back at some of the film on this series. The Raptors played against the Sixers this season, and kind of defensively, the approach was similar to the way they guarded the Lakers. Is just a lot of hard doubling in the post. Even when he was on Gasol, we'll occasionally see really hard double teams. Al Horford on posting up Pascal. I don't even think that's an advantage. Still a hard double team. When Tobias Harris was. Trying to post up Serge Ibaka, a hard double team. These are strange situations where you don't necessarily anticipate double teams coming, but because there's so little shooting on the Sixers, you can do that.
And yeah, exactly. You're not leaving yourself super vulnerable on the weak side or whatever.
Exactly. And there's just always, advantages, I guess, that you can create as a defense and maybe create like turnovers and stuff like that. Obviously, Embiid is a guy who's able to turn it over. Tobias Harris, not really a high-level passer. So he's going to make a very basic pass, maybe just back on directly out to the wing. And, then you can really give yourself a chance to rotate. Horford a little bit tougher because he is a decent passer. But yeah, I mean, like there's a lot of hard doubles in the post, a lot of zone defense for the Raptors. And of course, the Raptors can play their two center lineup, which is always just kind of fun because it is just cool to see Pascal run point guard.
yeah, exactly. I think Nurse is kind of saving that lineup for the playoffs, and I'm curious to see like where he decides to trot it out eventually.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know he'll do it against the Sixers. I mean, he did it. Yeah. Obviously, that was the big in-series adjustments that the Raptors made against the Sixers to get past them last year, and we saw a little bit of it only in desperation mode. But remember that game where they lost in Philadelphia? They were down because they had a really bad third quarter. And in the fourth quarter, they started throwing this big lineup out there, but then they also played a full-court press with it. It was so strange. You would not think having two centers is a great opportunity to play a full-court press, but it worked really well.
Yeah.
And I think Rondé was out there, too. Like, it was like a super big lineup. it's interesting. I don't know. I think the Sixers, I just don't think they can score very well against the Raptors. If you can keep Ben Simmons out of transition, which is tough, but, if you can do that, the Raptors are fine everywhere else. It's just scoring on the Sixers is a little tough. And that's where I'm looking at a guy like Fred VanVleet. Last year, Fred was terrible against the Sixers in the playoff series. But this year, Fred's had some really good games against the Sixers. He's had over 20 points twice.
Wow.
If Fred can, just basically be Fred against the Sixers this year, I think, I don't know. I mean, it's just one game, but...
Yeah. I also think that it's an opportunity for, Norm as well.
Yeah.
To just like showcase his expanded arsenal this season. And there's been, I don't know, just enough like internal improvement from the Raptors that I think they have the ability to still handle a team like Philly.
Mm-hmm. And then last game, the Raptors play the Denver Nuggets to end their 8-game schedule. Again, at this point, there might be nothing to play for. So it is very difficult to anticipate and predict how this thing is going to go.
Yeah, it might be a lot of O'Shea Brissett minutes in this one.
Yeah.
Which I would love to see.
Hey, listen, you know, he's earned it. Maybe we see some Paul Watson in this game. But
sure.
Assuming it's a regular game. So the Raptors are 0-3 against the Denver Nuggets in the Nick Nurse era. But I do have to add the caveat that Marc Gasol has played in none of these games. And you just want to have, I don't know, maybe Marc Gasol guarding Nikola Jokic instead of Boucher. Sort of
perfectly built to match up against him.
Yeah. They've even synced up their weight loss. It's perfect. But yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. This was a tough game to anticipate, but
yeah, the Nuggets are good. They sort of feel a little bit like Philly, just in terms of like their top end talent is super good, mm-hmm. and then there's maybe just a couple of weak spots or their depth isn't quite there. Yeah. But like, and one of the things that hurt them a little bit this season was they missed Millsap. I think he missed like 20 games or something, and he's obviously a really good two way player. But yeah, you go through their rotation. It's like Jokic, Millsap, Gary Harris, Will Barton, Jeremy Grant. Like that's pretty good talent there. Jamal Murray too. Yeah. Monty Morris is nice off the bench, and then they have a couple good wing defenders in Torrey Craig and Malik Beasley, Michael Porter Jr. I don't know how much run he'll get. But yeah, they have a pretty nice team.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, like they deserve to be in the 3 seed. But this is a tough one for me to anticipate. I'm not as familiar with the Nuggets as I am with the other teams as well. Obviously, I think Will Barton's had a really good season for them, and Gary Harris has been playing good as well. So they're dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, Harris really came on stronger as the year went on. I think he started off a little slow, but he was pretty good in that game against the Raptors. I thought, you know, it was a little surprising to see him make a lot of those shots. But yeah, I mean, honestly, it's just everything revolves around Jokic. Like, there's just not, I mean, it's a good team, for sure. But if you can just, like, not have to double team Jokic, which is tough, most teams have to double team Jokic. You can just not double team Jokic, and it's a lot more of Jamal Murray trying to create up pick and roll, which he can do, but he's kind of streaky that way. And then the rest of the guys, even though they're capable offensively, not that worried. I think with the Raptors, you know, they have a lot of great defenders. I think they can handle them one-on-one. And it's really just like not having a double Jokic. And that's the thing that the Raptors have had to do every single time. Like, you know, okay, yeah. OG had 7 steals and 30 points that last time, which was great. But like Jokic had, I think he had like 24 points, like 18 rebounds, like 12 assists. Like it was
it's still a pretty dominant performance.
It's like, all right, what are we really going to do? Because you're going against Chris Boucher. And Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. So, yeah, I mean, look, hopefully they don't have to do that anymore if Gasol plays. And
I think Millsap will be dangerous for them too, potentially. I think he was missing the last game the Nuggets played against them.
They were.
And that's just like, I don't think you want him as a primary option, but if like Jokic can pass it to Millsap and he makes a play like that, I can see that leading to some success for them offensively. But yeah. I also think the Raptors are built well enough that the Nuggets don't have a super clear advantage anywhere. So I think it'll be okay.
Who would you rather have at this point? Paul Millsap or Al Horford? Obviously, they were teammates for a long time.
Oh, that's a great question. I probably would go with Millsap just because, like, I know he was injured this year, and if Al Horford wasn't injured this year and he just is bad.
Yeah, fair enough. It's a good point.
Yeah, that's where I would lean.
Yeah. Yeah, Millsap's had a really nice career for a guy who was second round pick.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was in that Kyle Lowry draft, man. Damn, that's some of these guys are.
Was it Paul Millsap who dropped like 5 threes against the Heat when he was playing with the Jazz? I remember there was a game.
Oh, yeah. The Sunday out of Gaines game.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up. That was a great game.
Yeah.
What? He had 46 points on 19 of 28 shooting against Miami. Oh, my God. On the road, too. This wasn't even like one of those weird Utah games.
Yeah, no, I watched it and it was just like a
holy. Where was Chris Bosh? Like, did he play? Like,
he went off in the fourth quarter. I think he hit like 4 or 5 threes in the fourth quarter to send it to OT or something.
Wow, LeBron 5 of 18. That's unfortunate. That's unfortunate. yeah, the Jazz had some pretty decent players in that team. I'm looking at it now, like Millsap, Deron Williams, back when he was still good, AK-47, just a great player overall. Al Jefferson, okay, but he was pretty good back then. And then even Rajah Bell, like, that's a solid team. They had Gordon Hayward coming off the bench.
Yeah.
CJ Miles. Yeah, that's not bad. Not a bad 7.
Yeah, they've had a nice, like, revolving door of good talent and just haven't, you know, quite put it together to make a deep run.
Yeah. Are you following along this melodrama? This is the shittiest version of Kobe Shaq.
Not really. It's like Gobert's mad because Donovan Mitchell's being ball dominant, but it's like,
but Gobert, right, you can't do anything with the ball.
Passing it to you, dumbass.
No, like, unless you're dunking the ball, you don't have, like, it's not even, I don't even trust him to put up like a hook shot or whatever, like, you know.
Yeah, and I don't get a lot of the hate that Gobert gets too. Like, I get he's like a feisty guy, but uh-huh. I don't know. He's a little bit annoying, but I think the amount of hate that he gets is outsized. Mm. And actually, something I'm curious about on that is if the Jazz do decide they have to move off of him, if he is sort of generally disliked around the league, I wonder if a smart team with a good culture will just like snap him up for, you know, cents on the dollar and use him as the backbone of their defense. Could be interesting.
I was going to say, because he is still a really great player. Like, fantastic, really, but... yeah, I mean, some of the reports, I mean, it's just bad. It's always bad when you see things leaked to the media, when things aren't kept in-house. But then the stuff that's leaked is, like, petty, too. Like, so when Kyrie was, basically leading the charge of, like, hey, should we really do the restart? You saw his teammates start to really leak stuff that would look bad on Kyrie. And that's what you could tell the rest of the team doesn't like him.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with Rudy Gobert. Like, it's just the stuff that was leaked about, like, oh, Rudy... he just has a constant need to prove himself and stuff like that. It's like, all right, like, come on, man.
Yeah, it's pretty damning. Mm-hmm. And I mean, they're in it more than I am. It's difficult to tell, like, what is just a hit piece because of personal gripes and whatever else.
Yeah. What was it? This is from a recent article. Some close to Gobert believe that this blend of insecurity and vanity is rooted in his experience growing up in France as a gangly kid with glasses. It's like, come on. Some of this stuff is also unfair. Like, why?
That's just like speculation.
So he grew up in France? Like
psychological makeup of being like a tall person?
Yeah, like, okay.
most NBA players were probably like gangly teenagers. So, I don't know.
I didn't think we ended this podcast talking so much about Rudy Gobert, but this was fun, Brad. Thanks for coming on as always.
Yeah, definitely.
Definitely check out your YouTube channel.
I've been breaking down the every Raptors win from their championship run last season, and I made it all the way up to NBA Finals Game 1. So I'm gonna. I think they lost Game 2 and won Game 3. So I'm gonna be breaking down Game 3. Probably in the next week, so check that out.
All right, that's fantastic. And of course, when the season comes back, are you going to be continuing to do the recaps?
Oh yeah, I'll be doing recaps. I'll be writing stuff on my Patreon, patreon.com/toomuchhoops. You can subscribe for a couple bucks, get some exclusive content. Check it out.
That's fantastic, man. And then follow you on Twitter as well, man, because you're increasingly active on there. And it's good.
Yeah,
to
go
see,
for it.
You know, so that's. That does it for the podcast. Brad, thanks for coming on. And I appreciate it.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.